All right, I'm Stephanie.
I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part. Wow, it said recording in progress. Hello.
Hello.
That was so official. I know.
Yes.
Fancy. Well, I don't know if we can blame the full moon because it's no longer a full moon right now, but what the heck is going on with technology? It's just not working.
It's just not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have any more answers for what's happening on this planet. It feels like everyone has gone haywire. Have you listened to the news at all?
Oh, a little bit, but I've kind of been down for the count for a couple days. The last thing I heard was Taylor Swift and her boyfriend broke up. So that's all I know.
Okay. That's not so haywire. I meant more like House speakers getting fired. I meant more like our top secret government paperwork getting leaked on Twitter. I meant more like abortion pills being banned. I meant more like what happened? What else is going on? Like everything, just everything.
Yeah,
I know. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas taking a $500,000 vacation to Indonesia from one of his donors. He's been taking those vacations, flying on private jets from his donor, but said that he didn't realize that was ethically irresponsible, but he understands now that it's wrong and he won't do that in the future. Apologies. Haywire. So I'm not surprised my computer is just not responding.
Part of it.
Yeah.
I did hear about the thing with Trump and him being indicted, and they didn't know how they were going to arrest him because no former president has ever been arrested before. So that was a whole thing. And I mean, that whole thing, I don't care if he slept with a porn star. They're just trying to make an example of him, and they just don't want him to run in 2024, is my opinion. But
yeah, I think everybody knows that at this point. I don't think anybody's fooled by the circus. We all understand what the play is. This is what they're doing. I don't know. I kind of feel like that's old news. I lost track of what happened after they indicted him.
I did too, but that I was kind of listening to that and I was like, I literally don't care.
Yeah, it's like I care, but I'm not so invested.
Yeah, I'm not invested.
Because it's going to be drawn out. I just want to know what the finale is. Let me know when something actually happens. I just thought it was interesting how he said, I'm going to be indicted. It's going to happen. And when he said that and it didn't immediately happen, everybody on the news made fun of him. Now, I'm not saying that I don't make fun of him too.
Right.
Not for anything. Everybody jumped on him like, oh, look at him. He's such like an idiot, yucking it up. But the man did know what was coming. And then immediately he was indicted. They turned on it and made a joke out of that. And like, it's just funny how the media will pivot any which way it suits them to make a joke out of however they want to make it.
So yeah.
It's like, I'm so tired of that. I'm like, you know what? I'm sick of everybody just taking the whatever suits them at that time for their buck. I'm tired of it. Let me know when it's done. Let me know when if something happens that I actually will have to figure out how that affects me in my life. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So we have much bigger problems.
Yes, we do.
Much bigger problems than that. They can figure out what they're doing with him. What about your holiday weekend? Wasn't great. right? You said you weren't feeling good.
Yeah, I just wasn't feeling good. I am feeling better now, but I mean, we don't really, not that, this sounds worse than it is. Yeah, we don't really celebrate Easter.
Don't worry about it. We don't do a big holiday here either. We don't do a big Passover.
But I think it's because we also, like, we don't have kids. I think we would be more into it because it's kind of for the kids in a way.
It is. So, I mean, the only reason we do, I mean, we did a little Passover dinner, just us with the kids. And the only reason we do it really, I mean, it does hold some symbolism and tradition for us, but it's the symbol and tradition that it holds for us is really for us passing it down and holding us together as a family unit, mm-hmm. more than anything else. I feel like it's sort of this thing about every year coming together more than actually what the mm-hmm. holiday is about. I feel right. like,
yeah. So,
we do it, but it's not a big thing here either. So, I mean, don't feel bad. I kind of feel like everybody should just do what feels right for them. I just love spring. I love the walks we've been taking as the weather gets warmer and seeing all the trees blossom. It absolutely thrilled my little heart when on Sunday morning, we went out for breakfast in the morning. And when we came back, I noticed that the peach tree you sent me was blossoming. And
that sparks joy. That sparks so much joy.
It warmed my little heart.
That was so nice.
Because I'm going to be honest, I wasn't sure if I killed it. I wasn't sure if it was going to come back. When I planted it last year, you know, it went in towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Even though it was, you know, quote unquote, guaranteed to survive frost. Guaranteed.
That's what I remember, like, when I was looking up all the trees and stuff. They're like, it's pretty hard to kill this tree, and I'm like, well, leave it to me, I can kill it. But I was like, all right, let's try it, because we were just having so much fun being like, what is she gonna do with a tree when she opens her door and there's a giant box of a tree at her door? Like, that was our whole thing. But also, the fact that it's living means that that tree actually is super hardy, because it survived this insane winter that we had, and it survived Phil munching on it.
Right, because that was the whole thing, is not only was I a little trepidant because it's me planting it, I wasn't sure if I planted it right, I wasn't sure about our soil, it's a weird rocky hill. And we planted it when it was already getting cold. And then when I thought, oh, maybe this thing has, you know, a chance, then the deer came and stripped away that little bit of growth. And that's when I, you know, I sent you the pictures and said, okay, Steph, this thing might not actually survive. Not because the company didn't send a good tree, but because the deer decimated what little growth was there. So we thought it was dead. And then look.
I'm so glad.
I know.
It's a metaphor for life.
I mean, for us, really.
For us.
For us. We're stronger than we think we are, right?
We are. I'm so glad that it's working, because every once in a while I'll get an email from that website and they're like, how's your peach tree? And I'm like, I don't know. It needs more time.
We will post a picture of those beautiful little pink flower buds on the Insta, and you can let the company know that it has survived us.
They done good. One thing that I fell down the rabbit hole a little bit over the weekend, because I think it's so interesting when psychologists try to label different when they try to label a person to, like, when you're in a conflict situation and they say, okay, do you act like the lion or the lamb? And okay. I think we've all heard the lion or the lamb. Like, are you kind of more docile, submissive, or are you going with full force? but this is one that I never heard before, and it was turtles, sharks, teddy bears, foxes, and owls.
Huh. Teddy bears, foxes, owls, sharks, and turtles?
Yeah. So
all of those seem like real animals except for teddy bears, which is a toy.
Yeah, so turtles, they withdraw, abandon both of their own goals in the relationship. Sharks are obviously aggressive, take full force. Teddy bears, they are the peacekeepers to smooth things over. And foxes, they are compromising. Owls, they adopt a style that views conflict as a problem to be solved. They're open to solving it. But I've never heard of these labels before. And I'm like, no. You can't just be one of the, like, it depends on the situation. But I'm like, hey, sometimes I'm a turtle because I like drama, but I don't like real drama. Like, but yeah. I can be a shark too, but not when it comes to myself. And so I was just curious if anyone has ever heard of these labels or like.
I've never heard of that kind of system. Seems a little strange. And not only because those sorts of labels seem incomplete to me as far as the kinds mm-hmm. of styles that there are for facing confrontation. And you're right. I think I can be very different in some sorts of confrontational situations mm-hmm. than I am in others. You know, I'm very different confronting strangers than I am confronting my husband. So I think it's very different, but also I don't think that those styles match those animals really. Like, okay, sharks are aggressive. Fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think foxes are compromising. I hate to tell you, but I think foxes are sneaky and will steal your shit. So I thought you were going to say, oh, foxes are wily and narcissistic. And then owls are wise.
I was just going to say that. Aren't owls like wise and like solemn and
kind of like aloof and will distance themselves and maybe also kind of will look down on you and be condescending mm-hmm. and feel like they will treat you like they're superior to you in an argument, which can feel kind of make you feel aggravated and make you feel frustrated because you don't want to talk to someone who's condescending to you. So like
exactly.
the also like the way they described the animals didn't feel so right to me other than maybe the turtle and shark. So I don't know that I like that system. Feels weird to me. I guess it listeners does. Can tell us if they've ever heard of that, but I never
did. It's just different conflict management styles, obviously, but it came mm-hmm. from David Johnson. He's a social psychologist, and this is what he studies, and he models the typical ways that people respond to, like, that's what his profession is. So he came up with this. I don't know if, I mean, I am not a doctor, but I will argue this.
Yeah, you know what? I'll make up my own system of animals, and you know what? I'll just write a book on it, and then I can have my own system I'll name after whatever.
We can come up with the first mm-hmm. one, dolphin. And those are just assholes.
Just straight up with a smile on their face though. They will cut you off with a smile.
Yeah.
Straight up. And they always drive an Audi.
Yeah, they do.
Straight up. Yep. I'm putting people who drive Audis in the fuck you corner this week. And I'm not giving with no explanation, right? Just right up. But speaking of psychological stuff, I'm going to just segue right into that. I want to ask you, if you could budget sleep, would you? And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. The way we sleep as humans is really inefficient, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. So you spend half your day getting started. By the time you're productive, you have to stop. So the question is, would you rather have the kind of sleep cycle where you could sleep for an hour or two, then go for a couple of hours, then stop and sleep for another hour or two, right? And then have that kind of cycle. It doesn't seem
very efficient.
Okay, or mind you, the scenarios I'm about to give you, just imagine that you lived in a world that your job allowed you to do this, society allowed you, you wouldn't lose your job or home or whatever, right? Imagine that whatever you're about to pick was what everybody else did too. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or would you rather lump sum the sleep for your life? For example, if you could sleep off an entire month of the year at once, could, like, would you do that?
I kind of do that.
No,
but like, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Like, if somebody told you when you got to December 31st, like, hey, Steph, like, which month this year do you want to sleep, and we'll give you back those days, like, pick the days in the year you want to take back for that month, like, that you want to budget out. Would you sleep off a month, like, in the summer because you hate the heat, or in the winter, or would you, like, trade to have, like, 3 weeks on, 2 weeks off? Like, would you do that and miss out on, like, a chunk of life, but also think about how much you could get done if you didn't have to sleep for a longer chunk of time?
Am I the only one doing this, or is, like, the whole world doing this?
So the world would also be on the same system, but they wouldn't be sleeping at the same times. They would be picking their own, the STO, their sleep time off. So, you know, they might pick a different month than you. And they would be like, hey, all right, I'm about to go on my pod. Peace out. I'll see you next month. You know what I mean? Or I'll see you in 2 weeks. So you would have to just, you know, you'd be on your own schedules. You'd have to find friends and partners who are compatible with you. You know, it'd be a different kind of social system. Just like we find people who are compatible with us, you know, depending on if they work days or nights or weekends like we do now. So, but yeah, they would be on those same sorts of however you accrue.
I think it would be easier to do shorter increments, like a week. Because doing like a year at a time and then going hardcore for like an X amount of time would be hard to do, because you would miss out on things, I feel like. And it would be hard to find everyone and everything that was on your same schedule. Mm-hmm. But I think I would do like a week at a time, maybe.
Okay.
Like, and then be like, all right, I'm going to sleep for a week, and then we're going on this amazing vacation, or we're going to go do something insane. I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example because no one's ever asked me this before, and I think it's so interesting.
I mean, legit, not my idea. I've been listening to that conspiracy podcast still, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's so good. I really like those guys. It's a really good podcast.
It is good.
Highly recommend. I really like it. So it's that was their idea that they were like tossing around, and I was like, ooh. But I thought about it. For me, I think that going for more than, like you said, more than a week at a time would break our brains. I thought about this real hard. And the reason I think that would happen is that if we went for a very long stretch of time doing things, we need time to process. And I think what happens is that we are so competitive and we don't know how to stop ourselves, that if our bodies don't stop us, that we will break everything. Like, we will just break the system. We'll break ourselves. We will just, we need time to like move back and figure out like, all right, what did I do? What have my actions caused? Like, how fast is the wheel moving? Like, what did I do this week? Like, what, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, even when you think about like what has happened from day to day, and how people will tell you like, oh, well, just sleep on it. And like how differently we can feel about what has happened between us and other people in a couple of days, and like between having like fights or arguments or signing contracts or purchasing things, and like how much 2 or 3 days can make a difference. And all of a sudden, if you had to move forward and move a wheel 3 weeks and you can't stop it, and like nobody could get a chance to like take a breath, like I just think the world would move too fast. Like nobody would stop themselves.
It would move really fast, but then there would also be times of like nothing happening too, because people will be asleep for a year, unless if everyone coordinates their schedules, which
I think it would be very chaotic. Yeah, I just feel like it's it would be very, I don't know, I just, maybe it's my own brain that can't wrap around the idea. I just feel like longer than a couple of days would be really hard for us all to
get in line. I do, like, I sort of do that now where like I won't sleep very much for a couple days and then I'll crash. But then there's times where like it'll be 11 o'clock at night, I'm like, all right, I gotta do this project, and I will be perfectly happy going all night working on a project or something like that, because I work really, like if I have a deadline, say, I work really well under pressure because it makes me focus. And if I can hold off sleep during those times and then just not crash later, that would be much more healthier.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm assuming that for this question, we're just going to suspend what that schedule would even do to our bodies, because we already know that like the less sleep we get, the worse it is for our health.
Yes.
Like we already know, and we know from all the studies that regardless of what people tell themselves about, oh, I'm just as healthy, my schedule is the same, I sleep the same amount of hours, every single study has shown people who are on a different schedule, their health and their life expectancy is not as good as people who are on a schedule that they are awake when the sun is up and they're asleep when the sun is down. Mm-hmm. We don't know why that is. It's just a biological thing. It's how humans evolved.
It's because we need to photosynthesize. We're like plants and we need that sunlight. But yeah, I 100%, because when there was a time like a year ago when I was in South Dakota, I like made myself have a bedtime and a wake up time. And I felt so good. Like I just did it to see if I could do it, I think. And I would even like have my phone shut off at a certain time. Like I put myself on parental controls. Like, yeah. But I mean, and it worked for a while, but then I was like, I just got back into my old habits of like, you know, going to bed, watching a movie or playing on my phone.
Yeah. Yep. And we ought all do it. We all do it.
You know,
we're all addicted.
We're all addicted.
Part of the problem. Yeah.
I think that would be an interesting challenge. If, I mean, just give it like a week, because you need to do it more than just one day. But if you say like, okay, bedtime is at 10:30 at night and I wake up at 6 a.m. Could you do it for like a week?
I mean, I feel like a week you probably could, but longer than that's really hard to stick to. That's why you have to stick to something for, what did they say, 21 days for it to be a habit?
Yeah, at least 2 weeks, I would say. I'm going to try it again. Let's see. Oh, man, I just got so stressed out. So I don't know if you do this, but like when you start a project or you start working on something, you're like, I can't focus unless if my office is clean, or I can't focus until I make the bed. And so I was like, I'm going to try this. So next time we record, I can tell you about this sleep budgeting system that we do and how it's going. But I was like, nope, laundry has to get done first.
That's when I know that my ADHD is in full swing, because that's my distraction is, I have to do something else before I can get to my other task, when no, what I should do is just get to the task I need to get done. However, that's just what I tell myself, is I should do something else first to make myself comfortable or whatever other excuse I tell myself.
When I was in college, I would be like, all right, if the kitchen is clean, if the bathroom's clean, then I can focus and there aren't distractions for me to like if I'm listening to a lecture or whatever. Some of my classes I did online, and so I would like get up and start walking around and doing things while listening, and then I found out I wasn't actually listening, and because it was all ADD, of course. Yep. But if I had all those things done beforehand, and then everyone would make fun of me. They're like, who cares if your bathroom is clean? Just go do your homework. I'm like, you don't understand.
See, I'm the other way. If I am not 100% listening and looking, I am not going to pick it up.
Nope. Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yes. And then what'll happen is, so I have to have everything ready before I focus. Then I have to focus 100%. And then, I don't know if you ever do this, where you'll tell yourself, okay, I have to do this by a certain time, or I have to get this done a certain way with certain materials.
Oh yeah.
And then if like that time passes, or if you don't have exactly those ingredients or whatever, you'll be like, oh, I guess I can't do it now. I guess I'll have to wait till tomorrow. Like, even though you probably still could get it done or do part of it, but you'll just make an excuse to put it, I'll procrastinate. I will find a reason to put it off, even though I could get part of it done. I'll find a reason to push it off. I will avoid it.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, 100%.
All my problems out right there, all smeared out. And yet straight A student, valedictorian, so, you know, nerd. Star pupil. Yep. Always like picking up the heaviest projects, doing all the group project work, always volunteering for the most at work. Why? So I can stress myself out the most.
I definitely can relate to that a little bit, where I'm like, I want to be the teacher's pet. I want to be the number one, but.
Yep. I'll do the most. God. Anyway.
Yes. Do you have any housekeeping or anything before we get into a story?
I just want to say thank you and shout out to our Indian friends, Aditya and Jasmine. We went to their wedding this past weekend, and it was amazing. I had never been to an Indian wedding, but I only want to go to Indian weddings now forever. They were beautiful, and it was just, the energy was so exciting. It was crazy. I mean, 3 days of just nonstop energy. It was exhausting, but it was amazing and colorful and loud. And I loved it. It was so great. Everybody should go.
I did see the pictures of the henna on your hands. That was beautiful. And a couple of the other pictures you sent, it was like a movie. It was gorgeous. And that one picture of the bride, like, you have to send that to her, because it was amazing. I'm telling you.
They carried her in on that paladin. And I mean, she was just gorgeous. They presented her with literally platters of jewelry. Mm. They walked around a fire. They were anointed with different powders. There was throwing of flower petals. We marched in with the groom on a horse. There was a live drummer the whole day of the wedding. You know, we had the henna the day before. Thursday night, they started with the entire family, presented them with all these different coordinated dances. So like the brother-in-law and sister-in-law presented a dance. The children did a coordinated dance. The parents each did coordinated dances. both sets of the in-laws. And there was all of like these traditional cultural dances with the music, all the food. It was just, it was amazing. So I learned so much. I had so much fun. I was so honored to be there and to be part of it. I'm so glad we were able to go at the last minute and find the Indian clothing, because the website that didn't send it to me, I think it's pronounced Nava. They can go to the fuck you corner for not getting me my clothes on time.
Oh yeah.
I ordered it like a month ago for no good reason. They didn't get it to me on time. And but we went down to Jersey City. Deans can get a shout out. They did a great job. I went into that store. The lady was like, how can I help you? I said, I need some clothes for a wedding. And within 1 hour, I walked out of there with two beautiful outfits. And I felt like a princess in there. It was awesome. Awesome.
That's so cool.
Yes. And it was, I felt like just everybody was having such a great time. It felt like it wasn't stiff. You know, you go to weddings and I don't know, I feel like American weddings are very stiff. I gotta be honest. I've been to Filipino weddings. I've been to Spanish weddings. This wedding was turned up the highest. This was the most energetic I'd ever seen a wedding. We didn't get off the dance floor, like not even to barely
eat.
It was nuts.
That just sounds so freaking amazing. I want my next wedding. If Josh is listening to this episode, we're doing an Indian wedding. I want to walk around fire. I want to be presented with platters of jewelry.
Right? I'm telling you, I want to be carried in on a golden paladin.
Beautiful like henna tattoo and gorgeous outfits. And
she had so many gorgeous, every couple of hours she was changing into a more beautiful outfit. She was a dream. Absolutely stunning. Beautiful. So I wish them the best.
Snaps for them.
Yes. Very well done. Amazing.
Love it.
But that's it. I don't have any other housekeeping or anything. What do you have for me this week?
So this is actually going to be a re-recording a little bit of an episode that I lost.
All right. Well,
it never got posted. And I thought it was
in a while. I probably forgot it.
Yeah, it was from when I was in South Dakota and I was visiting all these places that like people may have learned about growing up or from old-timey movies and westerns. And all these people are real people in real places, but I'm going to tell you like the real stories behind them. And yeah, let's get into it. It is basically about Deadwood, which when I went to Deadwood, they still have very narrow streets from when they were driving horses and buggies and cobblestone. Like it's still very, I think it's pretty cool. But then they just put neon signs everywhere and you just go there to gamble.
but
it's definitely very commercialized. But Deadwood, South Dakota, it's a place that technically should never have legally existed, because in 1776 it was an area by the indigenous people, the Lakota Sioux, and they were at war over the area between the Cheyenne. They claimed the land around the Black Hills and named the area, I'm going to get this messed up, Pahasapa, and it means Black Hills, because to this day, and I can account for this, the area is so densely populated with the trees that from a distance, the hills, they do look black. This area is special to them, and it's because it's a part of their creation stories. They believe that all that land there is holy, and that's where their first humans came from. And they believe that a woman came out of a cave called Wind Cave, and that's basically like where the first humans came from. And it's really interesting. And you can actually go visit Wind Cave in a national park, which it should still be their land, but at least it's being protected in a way.
Oh, man. At least.
Really. Yeah. In 1868, the Treaty of Fort Laramie was between the U.S. and the Sioux, and it ended the Red Cloud War. And the U.S. agreed to move off the land and abandon all forts in the area, which was just Wyoming, which is literally like 50 miles to the west. But as we all know, regardless of the Sioux being there first, the United States had a problem with just moving. And the reason why the U.S. didn't want to give the land back to the indigenous people is because gold was discovered. And apparently there was so much gold in the hills that like you could be riding on the trails and all of a sudden the light would catch a certain way and you would see reflecting coming out from the hills. And that was literally like streaks of gold coming down from the like little crevasses of the land. That's how much was in there.
Wow.
And so obviously people knew about the rumors, but when people were like on the Oregon Trail or traveling out west, they would see these like little glimmers and shining, but they weren't panning for gold yet. But finally in 1872, the campaign to prospect in the Black Hills, it didn't come without warning from General Hancock, who said it was not only a federal offense, but it will come without problems from the Sioux, because that's where their creation story, that's their holy land. Along came General Custer he decided to select an area to begin panning for gold, and this started the gold rush. 15,000 miners were sent to the area, and they started digging into the mountains, panning for gold. It brought merchants, publishers, newspapers, saloon keepers, and other people who just had dreams of getting rich quick. And that is when Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, they rode to go meet the president. And they wanted to report on the conditions and how they're basically getting their land torn up. And the president offered Sitting Bull $6 million to buy the land. But they said, no, this is our holy land. We've had it for hundreds of years. You can't just give us a check and keep just
doing like, whatever you want with it.
Yeah, doing whatever you want with it.
It's not for sale.
It's not for sale. That's not why they came there. And so January 31st, 1876, President Garfield stated he would no longer be removing prospectors from the land, and he told the Sioux to basically get over it, give up the land, and you can move to a reservation. Not good. So this brought on a battle led by Crazy Horse, and they beat General Custer terribly. And even Native Americans who did surrender and left, they fled to surrounding areas of Canada. So even though General Custer, the war, they beat them in a battle, it didn't get them to move away. So how did Deadwood get its name? It's not that interesting. I thought it had to do with like a battle or like, I don't know, like there's all these names like Devil's Lake, Deadwood. And I thought it would have like a fascinating story, like another battle or something.
Doesn't have to do with like an evil spirit or some legend of something.
Nope. It's just a narrow gulch lined with some dead trees, and they named it Deadwood Gulch. And apparently gulches are where like water comes down and they can pan for gold. That's it. And I was like, we are going to change that narrative and come up with a way better name, because
that's boring.
That is boring. Back in August 1875, the battles with the Sioux continued, and battle lines were growing stronger and stronger. And this is where racism was starting to grow and burring in its roots. after a battle, a Native American's head, and this is really awful, but after a battle, a Native American's head was paraded through the town and brought to the town doctor. The doctor proclaimed that this Native American could not have been intelligent because the head only weighed 44 ounces, which makes no sense. So they just are assuming that, like, this person's head was smaller, so they were less intelligent. And then they made that generalization on all of them based on that instance, which is mind-blowing to me. It doesn't compute. Some of these battles, they brought even more crime to a lawless area. Some examples of Deadwood and this whole area being a crime-ridden area. There was a preacher, the first preacher in Deadwood. He held the first Christian service in the area, and he went on a ride. He left a note on his door saying that he would be back by 3 p.m., God willing, but he obviously did not come back. He was found on a trail outside the town with a gunshot in his chest. It was blamed on the Native Americans, but it was also probably due to the fact that this is a lawless area and there was no place for a church in Deadwood. So I don't know if that was like the first murder, but anytime a church was brought into Deadwood, they just let it be known that it wasn't welcome there because they would just shoot the preacher or the priest or whoever came in. Sex slavery was also rampant in the area. Women were conned into coming to Deadwood with promises of making money and getting jobs, saying that there was lots of availability to have a good life, but it was a sex trade. They were working as prostitutes. It's believed that 90% of the women in Deadwood were prostitutes. Addiction and suicide were common, with morphine being one of the newest cure-alls of the time. Which, have you ever seen those little tinctures and bottles from like old pharmacies? And then it's like, do you have coughing, sneezing, runny nose, back pain?
Yes.
And it's like the cure-all is like morphine, morphine, morphine.
Yes. Like, here's a little cherry syrup and we've happened to add some morphine.
Yes. It's estimated that 1 in 200 women were addicted to it, and they would add drops to their tea or coffee or anything. For headaches, to cramps, or I think it was just that they didn't have to deal with men. Who knows?
Honestly, and if you read a lot of like books from that time, I think that the rich, bored women of that time would just add it to their tea whenever they just felt like it, just to get high. I'm not even joking. I think they used laudanum too.
And that's
what they would give women during childbirth to, like, you know, and give them, it was like a sedative.
Uh-huh.
It's like a Xanax. And so they would just put those drops into their coffee or tea whenever they felt like that. They went all loosey goosey with that shit.
So some of the most famous sex workers of that time were Madame Mustache. And yes, she legit had a mustache. There's pictures of her that we can post. That's awesome.
I love that.
And Dirty Ann. I don't know why she's Dirty Ann, but okay.
Is she famous in a good way or a bad
I don't know.
Way?
I don't like, know. Dirty could be good or bad.
Like, yeah.
Dora Dufran. She was 15 when she arrived in Deadwood, but she was one of the few women who kind of worked her way up the system. She became queen of all madams and brothel owners, which I never heard of that title before. Like, I've heard of a madam, but I guess the madams have a boss and it's the queen. So,
wow.
Good for you, Dora. I want to be a Dora.
That is next level.
Another queen, she was queen of the blondes, and her name was Molly Johnson, which, I mean, that's interesting. if you were looking for a blonde, you go to Molly. And this is also kind of weird. The brothels were still open up until 1980. So that's when they finally closed, which I thought I misread that. I was like, 1880? Mm-mm. Nope. It was definitely the 80s. They were around in our lifetime.
No.
Yes.
Wait, well, hold on a minute. I was not alive in 1980.
Well, I was
alive. Neither were you. So not in our lifetime.
Well, I was made in the 80s. And I don't think they just went there and were like, okay, on this day, the brothel will be closed. I think they were phased out, because there's no way that it went on for 200 years. And then one day they're like, okay, it's done. I don't think that happened. I'm just
saying. You don't think they just put a closed sign on the front door? No?
I don't think so.
All right.
Another interesting thing, which I did not know about, but there were Chinese immigrants who arrived to Deadwood, and they were workers on the railroad. They came to America seeking opportunity and wanting to earn money, which is obviously the American dream, right? No, because racism had been growing. And even though there were no rules in Deadwood, anyone can stake claim anywhere for any rhyme or reason. But for some reason, the Chinese weren't allowed to do that. So what did they do? The Chinese opened up the butcher shops and laundry facilities. And that seems sort of stereotypical, but it was genius, because gold miners needed places to spend money. They needed food. And when doing the laundry, the Chinese people, they would pan for the smallest gold dust and nuggets in the laundry. So all the panners, like people who are like dropping off
washing their laundry, clothes. Yeah,
it was so genius. So, and obviously with women being outnumbered, I mean, it was 200 to 1. So they needed laundry facilities. Unfortunately, that was the gender roles back then. And so the Chinese people, that's how they earned their money, in just little increments at a time, working their way up.
Wow.
I don't have the exact numbers of how many there were. I've heard 100 people. I've heard 250 people. But they had their own, quote, unquote, Chinatown, and their own churches in their own area of Deadwood. And they also had their opium dens, which were open until 1909. So they had their own area where they could be, even though, I mean, just what the white man did. They told other people where they could be and not be. All right.
Sounds very on brand.
Mm-hmm. So some of these people I thought were like cartoon characters. They're not, they're real people. I went to the graveyard where they are buried, so they did exist.
Ooh.
Wild Bill Hickok. He was originally a Pony Express rider between Custer and Deadwood. And it's a ride, it was about 50 miles that he did every couple of days, but he said it was the most dangerous ride in the hills. I don't know if it was the most dangerous ride. I mean, I know that the Native Americans and them weren't getting along, but I think he was saying that so he could keep his route, like job security. But he ended up due to failing eyesight, he was no longer a Pony Express rider. He ended up getting married to a woman named Agnes.
It's an old-timey.
It is old-timey.
Very old-timey name.
So there was an instance where Agnes, even though they had just gotten married, he knew that his wife didn't need taking care of, because she ran, she was like a circus performer or something crazy. So she was traveling all the time, and he just kind of was doing his old thing. She was 50. Bill was 39. And he had been shot. He was starting to use a cane. So he was basically like a lot older than he should have been. I don't know why they got married, if she kind of was doing her own thing and
Well, seems like she was a lot older than him, so maybe,
Bill was one of the men who came looking for fortune, yet he still wanted to set up a life for him. And while traveling from Cheyenne, they met Calamity Jane. And I love Calamity Jane.
That's awesome.
I will tell you about her. She was brash. She drank more than any of the men. She told stories by the fire. She was like known for her storytelling, even though no one ever believed her. So after arriving in Deadwood, Bill's morning consisted of taking a shot of whiskey and then using a nearby tree for target practice with his guns until his pistols were empty. Then he headed to breakfast, and his breakfast was cooked by the first African-American woman in the area. Then he finished his day playing poker and drinking whiskey at the number 10 saloon. No one ever saw him do any actual prospecting. And he was more of a shell of himself at this time because he was an alcoholic and addicted to gambling. Yet he couldn't keep up with professional poker players in the area. Bill started borrowing money and using poker to pay his debts, which of course is never a good thing. While Bill started to get threats due to non-payment, but Bill's response, basically if anyone tried to come at him, he would just pull his pistol out and threaten to kill them. Jack McCall was from Kentucky and had been roaming the West. He was playing Wild Bill one night and was losing badly to him. Bill felt bad and gave Jack some of his money to buy breakfast, which meant it was close to morning. So they had been gambling all night long. And so that morning, Bill started his routine, found a poker game at the number 10. He went and sat at the table with his back to the door and three other men. For the next hour, each game went as badly as the next. Finally, Bill had to ask Harry, the bartender, for a $50 loan. And the game started back up again. Someone mentioned that this just goes to show how much Wild Bill had fallen, because as a former marshal, Wild Bill would never sit with his back to the door. Bill did ask to switch seats a few times, but his request was ignored, which I even do that. I don't like having my back to the door. It makes me feel vulnerable, but...
Yeah, I get that. A lot of people won't sit in a restaurant or in another, any kind of room with their back to the door.
Jack McCall came back into the bar from the front door and kind of sat there idled while the poker hand was being dealt. The hand was being dealt to Bill as soon as... All right, so I'm going to try to explain this to explain another thing. I don't know if you know anything about poker, but there's a poker hand called the dead man's hand. And it's two black aces and two black eights. And that's the hand that was dealt to Bill. And this is where that poker hand, that name comes from, is because while the players were making their bets, Jack McCall crept behind Bill and he pulled a 45 and put it to the back of Bill's head. And basically was like, take that, and shot him in the head. The bullet went through his head, went through the man's wrist sitting next to Bill, and Bill slumped forward, slid out of his chair. Jack waved his gun around the saloon attempting to shoot, but the gun kept misfiring. So he ran out the door to the main street to hide inside of a butcher shop. A group of citizens did find him and held him on guard until they could decide what to do with him, because there was no police. And since the camp where they all were staying it was illegal anyways, there wasn't much they could do. I mean, they could throw him out, but it doesn't matter. It was like a tent. They could just set up a tent somewhere else. They had like this makeshift jury, and Jack claims that Bill killed his brother in Abilene. The jury had no way of knowing if this was true. Even if it wasn't, Bill never killed anyone. And Jack had no brother. The jury believed Jack killed Bill in revenge, and that was acceptable. So he was free to go. He jumped on a horse and ran out of Deadwood, provided by the Swear Engine, which is a bar still in existence to today, and left Deadwood the same day. There was a funeral for Bill, and people did pay their respects, and he is buried in Deadwood Cemetery. Finally, after 23 days on the run, Bill's older brother tracked down Jack McCall and brought him to justice in Wyoming. He was put on trial and found guilty. He was sentenced to hanging on March 1st, 1877, and he was the first man legally executed in the Dakota Territory.
Wow.
So, I don't know what Jack McCall's problem is or why he just walked up to Bill and shot him in the back of the head, but I've heard of the dead man's hand, but that's where that story comes from. So I mentioned Calamity Jane earlier. Mm-hmm. And an officer informed Utter when he was forming his train and asked Bill. Basically, I think Calamity Jane was just drunk, and they asked Wild Bill to take this wild woman. She showed up on payday. She went on a drinking binge, and the soldiers and her were passed out in the post guard house. She was sleeping off a hangover, still partially drunk and partially naked. The army gave her some military clothes on the train. They provided her with a buckskin suit. And that's why she's known for wearing this like buckskin suit, like this Daniel Boone getup. It's because she like passed out naked in the army barracks. And she like used it as a part of her. She cooked. She was one of the best mule team drivers. Some said better than the men. She was brash, smoked cigars, swore, drank anyone under the table, but somehow Wild Bill had a soft spot for Jane. She was somewhat of a notoriety at the time when she arrived in Deadwood. She was a popular dance hall girl because of her masculine appearance. Was that attractive back then? Like having broad shoulders and...
I think so. Remember when we talked about how Belle Gunness would pull in the men?
Yeah.
And they talked about how the men were attracted to that tall, broad chested type in those like late 1800s. So I think that for a while was the thing. And you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of what's her name from Game of Thrones? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the knight.
Yes. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
What's her name? Anyway, so it reminds me of that. Somebody who's like a beautiful face, but like will absolutely kick your ass.
Yeah.
So like that, with like very tall, broad-shouldered, but also carries herself gracefully. Mm-hmm. She was also in Wednesday. On Netflix, she played the principal. Yeah, she was the
principal. She's got blonde hair, blue eyes. Oh my God. Someone is screaming at this at us. Just DM us.
You know what?
Let us know.
You know the Instagram. You know the Facebook. Go there and yell at us. So what can I tell you? Anyway, go on.
Calamity Jane worked for the Swear Engine beginning shortly after her arrival in Deadwood. In 1876, she worked as a dancer and recruiter of young women to work in the brothel, which the Swear Engine also operated out of the saloon. Calamity Jane recruited women in Nebraska and Wyoming for her boss, who paid her in liquor and hard money. It was the Swear Engine's habit to pay young women's transportation to Deadwood, where they were led to believe they would be working as a waitress, a dancer, other occupations. But once in Deadwood, there was no money. There was no place to stay. They were forced into prostitution. With few other options, most of the women were forced to comply. The Swear Engine paid them just enough to allow them to live and kept them until they could no longer meet their quotas, which when they were unceremoniously fired. It was believed that Bill and Jane were lovers, but it wasn't the case. Bill had always said he had no use for her, and he didn't spend with any time with her on the train, but they appeared to just be friends. Calamity Jane would tell stories how she and Bill were like lovers and they had children together. But I think those were just some of her stories. There was even a woman named Jean Hickok McCormick who claimed that she was the daughter of Bill and Jane because of the stories that Jane put out there. And she even received government assistance up until her old age. But the story made no sense. The government investigated it. They looked at the dates where she was born, where Bill and Jane were born. There's no way that this woman could have been their daughter. So the government assistance did end. But that just goes to show like how wild some of Jane's stories were.
Wow. Out of control.
Yeah. I have a couple other people that we can talk about if you'd like, or...
Yeah, who else? Who else do we got?
So, Wyatt Earp. So, have you ever seen the movie Tombstone?
No.
So, there's some Westerns, and they always talk about the Earp brothers. Wyatt was a lawman from Deadwood and Tombstone. He was also a gambler. And apparently Wikipedia thought that was just an important detail to share, that everywhere I looked, like, it doesn't matter what he did in his life, he was a gambling man, which doesn't make him any more or less of a person.
I mean, it's just one part of somebody. It's exactly. Not a determining characteristic.
No. I agree. He moved from one boom town to another with his family, wife, and brothers, Virgil and James. With his brothers, he was the referee for boxing, Marshall, and he kept order in different towns he was brought to. He's most famously known for his role in the shootout of Tombstone at the OK Corral. And also, I guess there was a boxing match in San Francisco, the Fitzsimmons-Sharkley fight. After his death, he had become known to be one of the toughest, deadliest, most fearless gunmen to this day. But unfortunately, Deadwood was already claimed, and Wyatt mostly passed through on his way to Dodge City to keep looking for Doc Holliday and his wife, Big Nose Kate was her name.
Wow, I would have changed my nickname if that was it.
I know, but nicknames aren't like really you can't give yourself a nickname.
You would make sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what you could do, but you could do something. There's got to be something better than that.
Okay.
Anything. I don't care if it's frizzy hair, Kate. I don't care something's got to be better than Big Nose Kate.
Strong, independent woman, Kate. I don't know.
I mean, I don't even care if it's something bad, just not Big Nose Kate.
It's just not very endearing. Kitty LeRoy, she did it all. She was a child dancer who grew up to attract quite a following at the local clubs. The wild child, she was a trick shooter. She was known for blasting the apples off atop people's heads. She sometimes dealt cards. Kitty loved to dress as different personalities, sometimes men's clothes, sometimes clothes like dressing up like a gypsy. By the time she reached Deadwood, she had been married 3 times. I don't know how old she was, but she had been married 3 times. It's said that Kitty drew a gun on her husband, number 3, in an argument and shot him. He didn't die for several days. She apparently arrived in Deadwood on the same coach as Calamity Jane and Wild Bill Hickok. Once there, she married a 4th time. She worked as a prostitute and eventually opened the Mint Gambling Saloon, where she managed her own group of girls. Her 5th husband was her last, prospector and gambler Samuel Curley. He was jealous I guess Kitty had ongoing affairs and he was jealous of her. So he shot her in the Lone Star Saloon and then killed himself on December 6, 1877. I don't know if it's still called the Mint Gambling because I'm obviously not in South Dakota, but when we did go to Deadwood, they have paranormal investigating tours and it's at the same location. I just don't think it's still called the Mint Gambling, but there's an article that I found from 1878 and it reports one of the first hauntings of Kitty. And I guess, I don't know if because they've been doing paranormal investigations, if it is actually Kitty haunting it, or it's just people like drumming up energy to have these hauntings be possible. But the article says, to tell our tale briefly and simply is to repeat the story old and well known, the reappearance in spirit form of the departed humanity. In this case, it is the shadow of a woman, comely if not beautiful, and always following her footsteps to the tread and form of the man who is the cause of their double death. In the still watches of the night, the double phantoms are seen to tread the stairs where they once reclined in the flesh and linger o'er, it's like an old-timey word, linger o'er places where they reclined in loving embrace, and finally to melt away in the shadows of the night as peacefully as their bodies' soul seems to have done when the fatal bullets brought death and the grave to each, reads the story. That was kind of hard to read, but it's they had pictures of a woman wearing a white dress coming down the stairs at the saloon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just believed to be Kitty. So she still is haunting the place.
Why do they think it's her?
And
not some other random ghost? Like, why her?
That, I don't see. That's why I'm like, maybe it's the times they died December 6, 1877. And then January, 1878, they're already reporting hauntings.
Okay. So, all right. Know. So.
That's
there it. Wasn't time for somebody else to die in there. I
yeah. All right. So, but I mean, to this day, like in 2023, I don't know if it's still Kitty or if they're drumming up other stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
all right.
Who knows?
Interesting.
So from a town that was once bustling, a population of 25,000, had a mass exodus of people that left in 1918 when the Spanish flu epidemic and then a major fire hit in the 1930s. Years later, in the 1980s, a catastrophe hit and most of the original town burned to the ground. I wonder if that's why the brothel closed, because it burned down. It wasn't any like kind of law. It just like was ceased to exist.
Wow, can you imagine? They would have just left it up. It's not because God. They didn't take it down because wasn't
integrity.
No, like... or because, you know, it didn't have enough business or because, no, it's just because the building didn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. So it seemed like an end to Deadwood, but life was brought back into the town and the entire town has become a national landmark. Gambling is legal again in the area, and Kevin Costner, dibs, also invested greatly in the area, too. I think the entire town is, like, owned by Kevin Costner now. I'm pretty sure.
Stop.
Mm-hmm.
For the filming?
Well, he did Dances with Wolves and stuff in the 80s, and I think he owns, like, a horse ranch. He owns quite a bit in South Dakota. I don't know why. He likes it.
All right.
Kevin Costner, if you could please let us know. Little Death to His Part podcast at gmail.com. It may seem like a tourist trap now with saloons, the Wild West shows, restaurants, and the decor styles of the day, but it's done in a way that honors the time. And between the ghost haunts and tours, it is considered a hit on. There are really cool. I did the graveyard tour I did a couple other things, and it's really interesting. But those are the stories of some of the true crime that happened in Deadwood.
Whose graves did you see?
I did see Calamity Jane, Wild Bill Hickok. I can't, some of the names I'm like, I've heard of this person in history, but I don't know who they are. I did see like where Crazy Horse, they're building a whole statue, like monument out of a rock. It will never be completed because it's already been under construction for like 100 years, but what? That's a whole story in itself. Have I ever told you the story about the monument that they're building?
No.
Okay, so Crazy Horse is a hero, obviously. And to commemorate that, there were like two Swedish or two Polish people who wanted to build a monument in his honor. And so if they finish the monument, they will stop getting funding coming in. So you can come in and tour this gigantic statue monument in a cliffside, and it's supposed to be him on top of a horse, like pointing out to the horizon. But I went when I was a kid, when I was like 8 years old, and the only thing that was done was his face. And Josh and I went last year, and the face isn't even done. Like the arm is there, they spray painted like an outline of what it's supposed to look like, but what they're doing is like they take all these donations and stuff, but they won't be done ever doing, I mean, blast and digging, because then the donations will stop.
This is something that is everybody's aware of. It's known. It's such an open secret.
Yes, because they are running a school for Indigenous people, where they can go to college and things like that. And so the money is going back to them, but it's been like 3 generations, and this thing is never, I mean, it's so big, they'll do a blast and you can't even really tell that they did a blast in this cliff, but there's no way. It's, I mean, they built Dubai in like 5 years, but they can't get this little thing built.
It's not that they can't.
They won't.
They won't. They won't, and I get it.
Yeah. I think there's definitely, they make it seem like it's, they're giving so much back to the community, and that's what the donations go to. And when you buy a ticket there, it goes to like computers for the school and things like that, but like, come on, I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, who really knows what's going on over there?
I don't know where anything goes on anywhere.
Their land with their origin story, I wish I knew so much more about that, because I want to claim that is all humans' origin story, or like just a beautiful woman walked out of like a cave and was like, I'm here now. It seems so much more nice. Like that the just party seems can start so now. Nice. Yeah, I'm here.
we can begin.
Yeah. But I mean, of all places in the world for them to do that and then be like, I mean, there's other places in the United States that have gold. Like, why did they choose the one spot where they're like, no, this is our holiest land in the world, and you're wanting to tear it up now? Of all, I don't know. It just seems really weird to me.
Yeah, it's because the universe is unfair. It is not a fair place.
Yeah. But anyways, I thought they were interesting. And then going to go see those places that I'm like, maybe I learned about when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I went to public school, so like my US history is not very good.
Oh, please. I went to a private school. It doesn't matter. Everything in this country, I don't know how, I guess it's a little better now. Some schools are a little more woke. Mm-hmm. However, everything in our day doesn't matter. Private, public, whitewashed American history. I think in most places, even now, it's that way. Nobody was giving us the real story. Nobody told us mm-hmm. what happened to the American Indians. So we didn't know any of this. Nobody told us.
Nobody told us. And mm-hmm. And some of the stuff that we did learn when we were kids, the kids nowadays are like learning the real story of, like, I don't know, we all thought Abraham Lincoln was like this great guy, but he really wasn't. Yes, he freed the mm-hmm. slaves, but he didn't want to. Like, mm-mm. he was just kind of forced into the position. But I mean,
there's a political move.
It was a political move.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Washington told plenty of lies.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're not the greatest country in the world. The kids are learning a little, but it's a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely. What else? What other crap did they teach us? Oh, Christopher Columbus discovered America.
Oh, yeah.
I love that one. I mean, let's give a round of applause. And now they, you know, they've tried now, right, to make it Indigenous American Day. But it's like, it's too little too late.
Too little too late. I mean, autism awareness gets a whole month.
Right?
Not saying that they should or shouldn't. I'm just saying.
Just saying. Right. Just throwing it out there, because some school districts don't even get off for that day. So mm-hmm. why not make that a national holiday? You know, like Thanksgiving. How about not lump that in with another holiday? Give them their own holiday, maybe, or something mm-hmm. else to, you know.
Or maybe teach them what actually happened. I don't know.
I mean, maybe.
I'm just throwing it out there. Just world.
Saying. And I don't want to hear about, oh, these kids are too young to learn about that level of violence. Really? Because they're not too young to learn that when somebody with a gun comes into school, we have to all squeeze into a closet. So yeah, no.
There was another school shooting today.
They're not too young to learn that people came here, we liked what they had, so we shot them, we gave them diseases, and then we took what they had and kept pushing them further away and just took everything they had by force. And that's what we did, and it was terrible. And there's nothing we're ever going to do that's going to be enough to say that we're sorry. And so that's what we have to just do always, is keep saying we're sorry. And that's what we should be teaching them. And no, mm-hmm. they're not too young to learn that. And so people can go ahead and scream about that. I'll die on that hill.
Oh, yeah. That is a good hill to die on. Yep. I do like that, because, I mean, it's one thing. I think all people want is just to, not necessarily apologize, but like just be like, I'm willing to learn, and I'm sorry for what I said, but it takes time to make that shift. I think that's all people want. I don't know.
People want to be heard.
Yes.
People want to be heard before anything. People want to feel validated in any conflict. It doesn't matter who it is between. The first step in de-escalation is hearing the other side. I was just talking about this with someone. When you want the other person to not be angry, you have to just say, I am listening to you. Go ahead. If the other person you don't feel that they are hearing you, you're going to continue to feel angry. That's not going to go away. So that's the first step. If we're not teaching our children, then they're not hearing it. They're not listening. So That's the first step. Everybody has to be listening.
So I think a part of it too is like taking ownership, because like certain phrases, I never realized this, but like saying like low man on the totem pole, or instead of a meeting, like having a powwow, like saying those things can be considered cultural appropriation. And so like taking ownership and saying like, I did not know that. That's my fault. I'm sorry. And this is what I'm going to do to change in the future.
Absolutely. These things that important. Yes. And it's not an excuse to say, well, I just grew up saying that. Okay. But now you know better.
Yeah.
Maybe, exactly. Maybe you didn't know. I understand that. We grew up, we heard our parents or other people around us use these words. That's okay.
Or phrases or terms. And
but now you do know better. Now you've heard that somebody else is not okay with using those words. So now that you know that, don't use those words. It's really simple. You don't have to be a jerk about it. You don't have to get offended. You don't have to be defensive. You can just understand that that is not okay. And just don't use those words. That's all.
That's all.
It's really simple. I don't understand why then people get, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Okay, just sit down. Don't use those words. That's all. Like, no need to argue about it.
Yeah.
So.
Do we have to solve all the, I mean, we can make the broad brush strokes, but we need everyone to fill in the details.
You know what? It's a continuing theme leading up to my run for presidency in 2024. I think we started this ball rolling when we started about talking about these problems at the beginning of the year, and we just keep handing out the solutions. So the donors can go ahead and hit us up on the socials. We're ready. I'm ready for the platform. We're ready for people to manage our campaign. That's good.
Do you have a motto, like a campaign motto? Like, what would your motto be?
Sit down. I'm talking.
I like it. Sit down. I want that on a pin.
It's going to be on the pin. And everyone can use it for themselves.
Sit down.
That's it. When you're talking, you're talking. It's your turn. People need to listen.
So I like that a lot.
So that you can feel validated too.
Good. See? Sit down. I'm talking.
People want to feel empowered. We can help them feel that way.
Good. I like it. On that note.
That's let's take that part. We're on an up note. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I like that up note. Natalia 2024.
All right. You have a great evening. I will talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, tilldeathdoaspartpodcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.